firmament itself, which I often behold, as if I saw it for the first time. Hence I worship the discoveries of wisdom and their discoverers. To enter, as it were, into the inheritance of many predecessors is a delight. It was for me that they laid up this treasure. It was for me that they toiled. But we should play the part of a careful householder. We should increase what we have inherited. This inheritance shall pass from me to my descendants larger than before. Much still remains to do, and much will always remain, and he who shall be born 1,000 ages hence will not be barred from his opportunity of adding something further. But even if the old masters have discovered everything, one thing will always be new: the application and the scientific study and classification of the discoveries made by others. Assume that prescriptions have been handed down to us for the healing of the eyes. There is no need of my searching for others in addition. But for all that, these prescriptions must be adapted to the particular disease and to the particular stage of the disease. Use this prescription to relieve granulation of the eyelids, that to reduce the swelling of the lids, this to prevent sudden pain or a rush of tears, that to sharpen the vision. Then compound these several prescriptions, watch for the right time of their application, and supply the proper treatment in each case. The cures for the spirit also have been discovered by the ancients, but it is our task to learn the method and the time of treatment. Our predecessors have worked much improvement, but have not worked out the problem. They deserve respect, however, and should be worshipped with a divine ritual. Why should I not keep statues of great men to kindle my enthusiasm and celebrate their birthdays? Why should I not continually greet them with respect and honor? The reverence which I owe to my own teachers, I owe in like measure to those teachers of the human race, the source from which the beginnings of such great blessings have flowed. If I meet a council or a praetor, I shall pay him all the honor which his post of honor is wont to receive. I shall dismount, uncover, and yield the road. What then? Shall I admit into my soul, with less than the highest marks of respect, Marcus Cato, the elder and the younger, Lilius the wise, Socrates and Plato, Zeno and Cleanthes? I worship them in very truth, and always rise to do honor to such noble names. Farewell. Letter 65. On the First Cause. I shared my time yesterday with ill health. It claimed for itself all the period before noon. In the afternoon, however, it yielded to me. And so I first tested my spirit by reading, then, when reading was found to be possible, I dared to make more demands upon the spirit, or, perhaps I should say, to make more concessions to it. I wrote a little, and indeed with more concentration than usual, for I am struggling with a difficult subject, and do not wish to be downed. In the midst of this, some friends visited me, with the purpose of employing force and of restraining me, as if I were a sick man indulging in some excess. So conversation was substituted for writing, and from this conversation I shall communicate to you the topic which is still the subject of debate, for we have appointed you referee. You have more of a task on your hands than you suppose, for the argument is threefold. Our Stoic philosophers, as you know, declare that there are two things in the universe which are the source of everything, namely, cause and matter. Matter lies sluggish, a substance ready for any use, but sure to remain unemployed if no one sets it in motion. Cause, however, by which we mean reason, molds matter and turns it in whatever direction it will, producing thereby various concrete results. Accordingly, there must be, in the case of each thing, that from which it is made, and, next, an agent by which it is made. The former is its material, the latter its cause. All art is but imitation of nature, Therefore, let me apply these statements of general principles to the things which have to be made by man. A statue, for example, has afforded matter which was to undergo treatment at the hands of the artist, and has had an artist who was to give form to the matter. Hence, in the case of the statue, the material was bronze, the cause was the workman. And so it goes with all things. They consist of that which is made, and of the maker. The Stoics believe in one cause only, the maker. But Aristotle thinks that the word cause can be used in three ways. The first cause, he says, is the actual matter, without which nothing can be created. The second is the workman. The third is the form, which is impressed upon every work, a statue, for example. This last is what Aristotle calls the eidos. There is too, says he, a fourth, the purpose of the work as a whole. Now, I shall show you what this last means. Bronze is the first cause of the statue, for it could never have been made unless there had been something from which it could be cast and molded. The second cause is the artist, for without the skilled hands of a workman, that bronze could not have been shaped to the outlines of the statue. The third cause is the form, inasmuch as our statue could never be called the lance-bearer, or the boy binding his hair, had not this special shape been stamped upon it. The fourth cause is the purpose of the work, for if this purpose had not existed, the statue would not have been made. Now, what is this purpose? It is that which attracted the artist, which he followed when he made the statue. It may have been money, if he has made it for sale, or renown, if he has worked for reputation, or religion, if he has wrought it as a gift for a temple. Therefore, this also is a cause contributing towards the making of the statue. Or do you think that we should avoid including, among the causes of a thing which has been made, that element without which the thing in question would not have been made? To these four, Plato adds a fifth cause, the pattern which he himself calls the idea, for it is this that the artist gazed upon when he created the work which he had decided to carry out. Now, it makes no difference whether he has this pattern outside himself, that he may direct his glance to it, or within himself, conceived and placed there by himself. God has within himself these patterns of all things, and his mind comprehends the harmonies and the measures of the whole.